Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So hello and welcome back to Charlton Live. We've had our 3 week hiatus and we're back for the big match preview. My name is Louis Mendez. I'm looking forward to looking ahead to the visit to Crewe as we start our League One season. But of course, this is Charlton. There's so much more to talk about than just football. Joining me on the internet to do just that, we've got a new recording method now. And we've all signed up for a website, so hopefully everyone's going to come through crystal clear. First up, we've got Mr. Lewis Catt. How you doing, Lou?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. How's your 3 weeks or so been since last season?
Yeah, it's been all right. It's been quite nice to have a quick turnaround, hasn't it? Because it's, you know, with all the lockdown and everything, it was good to have a distraction of football. So to have it back so quickly, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, obviously had a lot going on since then as well.
Just a bit.
Yeah, joining us as well, Mr. Tom Walling. How you doing, Tom?
Yeah, all right, mate.
I'm guessing you're absolutely buzzing by the amount of Welsh people we've signed in the window. Another one.
Honestly, and good performances as well. International break, which was lovely.
Excellent stuff. And joining us all the way from sunny Spain, Mr. Nathan Muller. How you doing, Nath?
Hola, ¿cómo está? Yeah, I'm good, mate. It's a bit weird because it doesn't feel like we've had like a, you know, usually you have that 6 week lull and then you look forward to welling away down the blimmin' Nag's Head or whatever it is. We ain't got that this year, but looking forward to all the signings we've made, loads of them. But yeah, buzzing, mate. Buzzing to be back. Nice to see you boys again. But and, yeah. Obviously, a big hello to all the listeners.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Well, so on tonight's show, obviously it's packed. Obviously, we're going to be looking ahead to Saturday's trip up to Crewe, our first game back in League One against Crewe Alexandra. We're also going to hear from Stuart Price from the Railway Men pod, who, of course, will give us a Crewe point of view ahead of the game. We're going to hear from Jess King, one of the women's team players, after their opening day draw against Crystal Palace. But come on, let's get to the meat of it. Obviously, we're going to talk about the fact that still no one knows really what's going to happen in the future, but it does seem there's a potential bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Thomas Sandgaard, a man none of us had ever heard of about 3 weeks ago, now seems likely to take over the club, I think it's fair to say. He's promised us milk and honey. We're expecting him at some point. So, Tom, if I had to ask you, are we getting ahead of ourselves or have we been saved?
It's the closest I think we've felt like we're getting to being saved. He's saying all the right things, isn't he? But we've heard that before. But there just seems, I don't know if it's desperation from our side or whether it's the way he's conducting himself, but there seems a little bit more validity in the stuff that he's saying. He seems genuinely honest. He seems like he wants to be involved. He's obviously come to games, which I think he's probably already been to more games than Roland ever did. I'm clinging on to the fact that he wants to be involved and he seems like he's got a plan. I think the one concern is obviously the injunction and the delay, which we'll come on to talk about, and whether he's prepared to hang around. But I know Boya said he's still going to be here for another week or so. So, it's probably the best shot we've got, I would say.
Lewis, I guess, you know, we've all heard a hell of a lot from Thomas Sandgaard. You know, I've had the pleasure of meeting him at a couple of games already and spoken to him. You know, he's been very interactive with the supporters. What are your initial feelings so far? I mean, he's got a proven track record in business. He owns like a medical supply company of some sorts over in the US. He's a rock star in his spare time as well. What are you feeling good about this one?
I am, yeah, and it's very easy to get overexcited because we've been here before so many times. But I do feel a higher sense of optimism when it comes to Thomas and the takeover that's been proposed. I think that he's shown sort of a keenness to speak to people that know the club better than he will. I think he understands that he's he hasn't got any experience in running a football club, so therefore is open to speaking to people that do and trying to sort of work with ways to make the club stable. He's come out and said that stability is the key, which is what all we want, really. You know, none of us are expecting someone to come in and splash absolute millions upon millions. What we want is just stability and support for Lee Bowyer, who, you know, we sing his praises every single time, as I cannot believe is still with us, and we're very, very lucky that he is. And he just deserves some resources so that he can help this club succeed. You know, he's done and achieved so much already with one hand tied behind his back, maybe even two. So the potential this football club has as a whole with the right backing is huge. And I really hope that we can get something done soon, because the longer the embargo and this potential injunction go on for, the less we can prepare for the upcoming season. But I'm feeling a lot more hopeful than I was, well, you know, after we'd been relegated and we didn't know where we stood. I think this is a positive step in the right direction. So I'm just keeping my fingers crossed.
Now, we've heard Nathan a few times in the last few weeks that Thomas was hopeful of getting a deal done, you know, in the next few days. I know a lot of people are sharing the rumour that they think it might even happen tomorrow, on Friday. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case, but you know, he seems to have stuck around after a lot of setbacks that we can speak about that have happened over the last few weeks. You know, he's shown he's had a bit of sticking power. It's just a case of you have to hope that this time is different to all the other times that we've had before.
No, of course. I think the thing with Charlton is, you know, we've had setbacks before and there's going to be more after this one. And I think it just it's a testament to all the fans. I know there's been a lot of fans involved in terms of protesting and obviously speaking to Thomas and all that sort of jazz. But and it's how we get through it at the end, I think, with it all. And I think if you look at Thomas, the difference he has. I mean, you look at Roland. Roland was Roland, and 2% was the quote, and he wasn't really interested. Catchy and Mayor sort of could have gone a slightly bit better, couldn't it? But and then even if you go back to Andrew Muir, he turned up with a scarf. But with it, I mean, he's showing a keenness, and like Lewis said, and he's doing the right thing, and he has a human level. So yeah, I mean, it's looking positive, but I'm still one of these until it's done, because there's so many sort of hurdles to go overcome. We'll just have to wait and see how it goes.
Well, I think it's a good idea that maybe we should hear from Thomas Sandgaard. I was hoping to get him on, you know, fresh sort of this evening, but he appears to be quite busy. I did speak briefly to him earlier, but he's had a busy day. So we've got a clip from our interview with him on BBC Radio London during the game at Swindon the other day. At this point, don't forget, there had been the setback of the temporary injunction. This now has been extended again because a court case has been set for next week. Again, we'll delve a little bit more into the court proceedings that are going on. So, you know, this was during a time when setbacks had already started to occur. So we asked Thomas Sandgaard anyway to come and join us on Radio London during the game against Swindon and give us a little bit of an update as to where we were with the process of the takeover.
Tell us where the situation with the takeover is at the moment.
Well, the best way to describe it is probably that I... unfortunately, I can't talk too much about it because... Of what's going on right now, so I hope that everything's sorted out here in a very short period of time.
The fact that you're here, you're watching the team in a League Cup game, you've got your Charlton Athletic scarf on and you're supporting the side from the director's box, we can read into that the situation is positive, can we?
Right, yeah, I see it very positive too, so at this point, unfortunately, that's not a whole lot I can say.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, Louis Mendes is our reporter, who I know you've been speaking to, and he's been following Charlton for a very long time. Louis, are there any areas in particular you want to speak to Thomas about? He says that you know, at the moment things are in a very tricky stage.
I mean, obviously, as you say, you can't say too much at this time. On Tuesday, things were looking very positive. There was what I imagine on your side was a minor setback on Wednesday when another potential buyer was given a temporary injunction. How do you see that as a major step back? Is that just a slight hurdle? Is it just an annoyance at this time?
Yeah, it's more like a minor nuisance. I assume that everything can move forward the way we intended to be, and it'll all be sorted out. So I'm not too worried about that.
And you mentioned on Twitter last night that you'd made plans to get funds into the country to, so it shows that as far as you're concerned, everything's still going ahead the way you want it to.
That's right. I'm staying here for another 4 or 5 days to make sure that we get everything over the finish line.
That's interesting, because originally I think you were planning on going home tomorrow. So do you think this extended deadline, now that the extra few days you're here, do you think, is it fair to say
that should be enough? That should be enough.
Yeah, and that's probably what you need, because obviously with the transfer window as it is and Charlton's situation as
it is... Yeah, the sooner the better. October 5th is coming fast.
So we go. So it's interesting now, lads, that he's sort of taken a step back in terms of what he's willing to say now. You heard there at the start, he said he can't say too much. He'd extended his stay. He's extended his stay again now in the country. He's going to be here at least until after next week's League Cup game at West Ham. Tom, if we can get this deal over the line, you know, the structure of the deal is going to be quite interesting as well. I'm aware of all these rumours that are going around. You know, he had to find out who he's dealing with in the first place. That's what these court cases have been about between ESI 1 and ESI 2. Now there's all sorts of rumours that he may even just be going to deal directly with Roland due to some sort of loophole. I've heard all these rumours. I mean, if that is the case, and we don't know for certain... that would be a remarkable way for things to turn out. But, you know, Thomas has spoken of his desire to get the whole lot, the stadium, that sort of stuff. If he could do a deal for everything, that'd be perfect. If he can't, I mean, the most important thing is that something is done soon so we can start to build and focus on the season ahead.
Definitely. I think what maybe makes me a little bit wary is that everything that he's saying and that he wants almost seems too perfect. Because if you said to anybody, what do you want? What's the perfect owner? You'd probably say a local businessman with the same amount of money as Thomas, who wants to own the whole thing, who wants to buy into the history, who wants to have it all under one roof and try and get us back into the Premier League. And apart from the fact that he's not local, he's pretty much ticking every one of those boxes. And we've just been through so much crap over the last few years that you want to believe him. And I think probably I do, more so than any of the other people that have come in over the past few months. But there's still that little bit of nagging doubt that at some point this could all go horribly wrong, particularly whilst the court case is still outstanding. But you're right, the perfect way would be for him to come in, him to own the training ground, the club, the valley, everything, and take it forward. And I said it the other day on my Twitter, I'm not greedy. You know, I don't want someone who's going to have us Champions League in 2 years or 3 years. I just want someone who's going to give us a bit of stability. And you hear it in Bowes today, like that's all he wants. He hasn't had any help at all since he took us over. And it's just doesn't feel like he's had a chance to show what he can do. And for that, we're not expecting him to sign Messi, especially now he's committed to Barcelona. But being able to just sign a player would be an improvement. And at the moment with the embargo, he can't even do that. So we're up against it as things stand for this season, and it's going to be tough. But if Sangar can get over the line, then I think we could have an exciting future ahead. But I'm wary that we've said this before, and that's the only thing that still concerns me. But he seems far more straight-laced and honest than any of the others that we've heard so far. And that's a definite positive.
Yeah, we'll hear a bit from Lee Bowyer's press day shortly on what could happen if Thomas comes in and what the danger is if he doesn't, because that's what we have to remember, Lewis. You know, the eagerness to get this deal over the line is important, because the season starts on Saturday. You know, the transfer window closes in October, and as it stands, we're probably playing a 17-year-old at centre back on Saturday.
Yeah, and Bowes has mentioned it a couple of times during the pre-season games that ultimately we've got players lined up to come in and strengthen and prepare for this season, but we can't sign any of them. And the longer this drags on, these players aren't going to wait around, and they're going to want to secure where they're going to be playing their football for this season. So it's frustrating that the court case is dragging on, because we all got quite excited last Tuesday when everything seemed to be like it was going sort of full steam ahead. And then 24 hours later, we're all looking around at each other thinking, well, what does this mean now? I'm glad that the court date was a typo when it said the 17th of October. I nearly fell out of my chair yesterday when I saw that. But I just want to get it out of the way and just focus on, you know, building a competitive squad for the upcoming season and trying to bounce back and get back into the Championship, because we worked incredibly hard to get there, and it feels as if we fell out of it on a whim because we had our hands tied behind our back with the January embargo when we couldn't strengthen, when we were completely injury stricken. And coming back from that lockdown period and the obstacles we had to overcome, it felt like we went out of it, you know, in quite a sad way, to be honest with you. And I think that the ultimate aim has to be to try and bounce straight back. But all the while we have the restrictions that we do, I think that the sort of expectation is going to be relatively low because, as you say, we're looking at the moment relying on 17-year-old Charlie Barker to start at centre-back potentially Saturday. And as good as he's been in these last two games, fantastic. Like, I've been so impressed with him. It's a hell of a lot of pressure to put on a 17-year-old kid, and we've seen it have negative effects on academy players previous. And I don't want to be in that position where we have to bloody young players so early because we can't sign anybody else.
So let's have a listen then to what Lee Bowyer said during his press day on the whole takeover situation. I mean, first of all, he was asked if he thinks that Thomas Angard would be the right man to come in and take over the reins at the Valley.
Yes, he's a businessman, but I think that the way he came across is if he's more like, look, this is long term. That was the impression I got. I think if Thomas does happen, then I think he is the right person to take the club forward for sure.
Brilliant. Cheers, Lee.
Hi, Lee. Just briefly carrying on from where you left off there, you know, with all the uncertainty over what could happen next, over the club's future and the ownership, you know, it's out of your hands, obviously. But do you have to, yourself, Jacko and Steve, have to have about, I don't know, 20 different plans for all eventualities in place just in case one scenario happens rather than the other?
Yeah, because we've got maybe six players lined up. And four definites and two that, okay, these will be in our plans if this gets taken away, this embargo and a takeover happens. This is what we have to do as plan A. Hopefully that happens. But plan B, Terry, I think you're going to struggle because you can't sign anyone. So plan B is dig deep and hope for the best, if you like, because if this doesn't happen, then the club's in trouble. We're in trouble now. So if this doesn't happen, then plan B will be you have to get players out before you can sign players. And we don't want to do that. And we can only sign players for a certain amount of money, but there is no money coming in. So plan B isn't good. We can't afford to go to plan B, trust me. So we do have plan A, plan B, plan C. Plan C is like we've sunk, so we can't have that. So we need plan A to work, trust me, because if not, then things ain't going to be pretty.
I wish I'd not said now.
Yeah, I'm just being honest. Like, you're asking me the question,
no, you're
telling
right.
You honestly. Like, yeah. We need plan A because plan B and plan C, they're not good. So.
Well, there you go. Paints a pretty sober picture, really, doesn't it? You know, Nathan, if Thomas comes in, great. But if he doesn't, I mean, it's quite clear that we're going to be deep in it. I mean, Bayer said in his press day today that if we don't have this takeover, there is absolutely no chance of us challenging for the top two, which, as a Charlton team going into a League One season, is what you would normally expect.
No, of course. I think we've got to be realistic and I think Bowes is. I mean, he's come to a crossroads now where we're hedging everything, really, on this whole saga with Sandgaard and ESI to be sorted. And I think every time there's a hurdle thrown in the way of, you know, of ESI from them and obviously their legal team, it's being met with frustration, it's not the fact. Well, it obviously mostly is of the ownership, but people know that if this doesn't happen, we're up something creek without a paddle. And I think we can't just sit here and pretend that we're not going to, because top two, that's not going to happen. As much as we've got good players, I would be surprised if we make top half. Honestly, the first 11, you've got good players in there, don't get me wrong. But we know when Christmas comes along, which is where we usually struggle with a small squad, we're going to struggle. And that's the worry for me, is not, yeah, we all want a nice owner, of course we do, and we all want this nightmare to end. But we've got to really think about that. You know, we could drop out, we could be in danger here if we don't get some players in. Because as Lewis and Tom were saying, you know, with Charlie Barker, you can't sit there and rely on people, because Charlie Barker's come in, he only played an under-23 game. But then when you look at the opposite side of the spectrum, and you looked at Joe Gomez, different gravy. And you knew that when Esri come in and Joe come in, and to an extent Cole Jenkinson and the John Joes, you knew they could play. But listen, hopefully Charlie proved me wrong, but we need players in. But that can't happen until the stuff behind the scenes is sorted. And it's worrying. So, I mean, I think on the outset, everyone's trying to be a bit more positive. But if it doesn't come off, I don't even want to think about it, to be honest with you, without bringing the mood down. But I think I'm just realistic. And I think Bose is with that interview as well.
Yeah, it was really hard to hear what Lee had to say during his press day today, when he was talking about what doesn't, you know, what goes wrong. If this doesn't happen, then we really are up slack alley. Now, before we go into a timeline, Tom, of what's happened since the Leeds game, I remember our last show of last season, we were all of the opinion that we won't be enjoying Lee Bowyer's managerial tenure for much longer. You know, there was when I was listening to his press conference at Leeds on the after we'd just been relegated, in my mind there was no way he was still going to be here. So you really have to take your hat off. You know, we saw fans went to show their appreciation when the squad left for Palace at Friendly a couple of weeks ago, just to show their appreciation to Bo and to Jacko for sticking around. I mean, it's unbelievable that he's still here.
I genuinely can't believe it either. No, that interview to me was a goodbye. With everything that's then gone on over the summer as well, there's not really been any incentive for him to stay. And I think there's clearly something special here between him and the club and the fans and the players. And we've seen that in the way that he carried that team through to League One, and the way he almost kept us up last season against every single odd, and he still wants to be here. And I think that desire is to be applauded, and I think we're very lucky that that loyalty is reciprocated, because usually the only loyalty there is primarily in football is the fans to the club. You know, players come and go, managers come and go, but I think Bowyer is slightly different, and I also think Charlton is slightly different to a lot of clubs in that respect as well. But I said to you on Saturday when we were at Swindon, that's the first time I've obviously seen him face to face since last season, and he looks tired, and it's obviously been a tough summer, but he's gone away, he's tried to get whatever rest he can, and he feels like he wants to give it a go again, and much like the fans, really, I suppose, he's clinging to Thomas Sandgaard being that saviour who can just give him that bit of support he needs. As we've heard, he has spoken to him a few times, so clearly that relationship is there, and it's just a case of getting all these more shady characters just out of the picture now, away from our club, and letting these two get on with it. Because I genuinely believe that if he's allowed to and he's given the opportunity to, then Bowyer could create something quite special here.
Yeah, and it's funny you should mention shady characters. I mean, Charlton has been wall-to-wall shady characters for so long now, and you know, two sets of shady characters are currently going toe-to-toe in the courts, Lewis, and that appears to have possibly been part of the delay, of course, in the potential sale to Thomas Sandgaard. Basically, there's two lots now arguing over who gets the honour of selling the club to Thomas Sandgaard. I mean, there's so much that's happened since that game at Leeds, and I was just going through, I remember, I forgot about this, but the day after when Chris Farnell ended up on TalkSport and said that he, like all other Charlton fans, was smarting. And I couldn't believe that he would describe himself as a Charlton fan, you know, with the obvious ties with the Bury situation last year as well that had everyone worried. We've seen the fans taking it into their own hands, bursting into his office up in Hale, bumping into Dave Jones, the former Southampton manager at the time, which certainly set alarm bells going, because someone had told me about 2 days later that Dave Jones was coming in, 2 days earlier, sorry, that Dave Jones was coming in to try and replace Steve Gallen. And also Dave Jones obviously was involved at Bury last year. So there was a lot of confusion and fear about what was going to happen next. Then you have the almost unprecedented step of the EFL actually failing some individuals on their owners and directors test. That included Paul Elliott, the guy who, you know, originally we were told had bought the club. Now it seems hasn't bought the club, although now the argument that he has, even though Chris Farnell did say in court that he hadn't at one point when there was this argument between Southall and ESI too over the changing of details on the company's house website. I mean, it's been absolute chaos, and which has then gone into this court case now between the two lot, where Paul Elliott's trying to get the injunction to prevent the sale of the club going to Thomas Sandgaard. That was turned down. Then he was granted an interim injunction to go to the Court of Appeal. He went to the Court of Appeal, who now say, yes, you can go on and appeal the verdict, which is where we are currently. I always thought over the last few weeks, you know, I didn't come into doing Charlton Live or supporting Charlton to have to become some sort of expert on the law. You know, luckily we've got Lauren Kramer who can do that for us, because, I mean, this is baffling and confusing and not the sort of thing that football supporters should be having to discuss on their podcast.
No, it's absolutely bizarre. And, you know, all of us trying to keep up with it and joining in on the Zoom Teams meetings to try and listen to what's going on in the court. I think it's just, it's crazy. It's absolutely bizarre. And ultimately, all of this on the front of it, there's a football club in the background that needs help, you know, seriously needs help. Because as Lee said in his interview today about sort of the lack of support and what would happen if it does go wrong, you know, all of that is what's important. This little sort of ego battle in the courts between ESI 1 and 2, or Panorama and Lex Dominus, or whatever they call themselves, is sort of taking away the priority of trying to get this football club competitive for the upcoming season and bouncing back. And obviously, the penalties and the sanctions that come with it if we cannot get something sorted. Ultimately, I don't know how Paul Elliott can fight his case. I'd assume if you failed the EFL director's test, it'd be pretty difficult for you to really fight your case, because I don't think anyone, I personally don't know of any ownership that's failed that test before. That it was brought up in the court that he'd never paid the pound. The ESI takeover version one with Southall and Tanoon, I don't know if that was ever even approved by the EFL. We know that there was issues with that when it first came around. And ultimately, that these little hiccups, you know, and the EFL take some of the blame, I think they have to, is hampering not just the upcoming season, but the future of our football club. And something needs to be done and lessons need to be learned from this should we come out the other side, to prevent this happening to other football clubs, especially at the moment during the pandemic, where finance of football clubs and effects of not having fans in the grounds and everything are ultimately going to have a huge financial, you know, huge financial burden on football clubs, especially at our level and below. Something has to be done and support has to be there to prevent rogue owners taking over football clubs, because it's becoming way too common now. We've seen it at Charlton with us time and time again. We've seen it with Orient, Coventry, Hull are going through stuff, Wigan, it's Bury. It's ridiculous. You can name so many clubs. They're rolling off my tongue as we speak. So something has to be done going forward to prevent this happening, because we will lose great football clubs, and especially in the climate as it is now, we'll lose them and there'll be no way of saving them. And we've seen that already with Bury.
Now, if we've seen these protests down the ground, haven't we, recently? I was there for the day that fans broke into the stadium and, of course, broke into the boardroom. When you see, I mean, the open letter from Paul Elliott that was on the South London Press website, where he was talking about how his plans for the club and, you know, trying to say that what everyone else has said about him isn't true and he loves the club and all this. I mean, it's hard to imagine that someone like him could match the passion of the fans who broke into the boardroom. And you have to say, if he really, really cared about the football club, he'd just get out of here if he didn't just care about getting a quick buck for himself, which is what it feels like from afar.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've got to be careful what I say, but for me, I mean, it's the whole thing is confusing, but I see the statement he pull out. It's a load of old tosh. It's just PR, posturing and all that jazz. The guy, to say that he loves the club, he has no affiliation with the club. He don't support them. He's never probably seen us. He's one of the other geezer's mates. You know, from what I've seen, it's not a fact, but from what I've seen, he's not been very successful in previous businesses. The geezer's an absolute donut. But, I mean, like you say, he needs to go. But the thing is like you say, in my opinion, he's only in it for one thing, because I still don't know this, what is it, this 500 grand he's put in or whatever. Is it his money? Really? Where's he got that from? I need to find that money tree. But I don't know where it's come from, but it just something doesn't sit right. If he's linked with Farnell, if he's his mate or whatever, I don't know. But something doesn't sit right. And I know Thomas Sandgaard hasn't got an affiliation, but the thing that he has done, he's come out like a human. He might have done a bit of the, you know, Matt Southall done it a bit at the early doors, but he's looked at the club. He's read about, you know, he's looked at the history. He's done his research. Paul Elliott is some random dude who had two laptops with a mouse, an iPad and some Windows Surface thing, bowling in a stingy little office, and goes, oh yeah, who is he, mate? Who are you? Like, what? There's no like background to him. And the deeper you dig into the background, it just makes you more suspect. Probably a nice bloke. I don't really care, but something doesn't sit right with him, and the whole thing is just crazy. But if he loves this club, as he's elaborately said in his statement, then yeah, I agree. He should say, you know what, I love Charlton Flick. Never seen him play, but I love him. I'm going to let it go into better hands. Because at the beginning, if we remember right at the beginning of his statement, he said that he would be open to other investors. Well, you've got one right there, mate. The reason that you're putting a fight up is because you're making sure you get your buck. And that's the main thing for me. But yeah, sorry about that. I went off on one there.
That's all right. It's the right platform for it. Yeah, the difference between, you know, Southall and Elliott and stuff coming in and saying all this stuff and Thomas Sandgaard doing it as well. Sandgaard's been on the scene for what, 3.5-4 weeks now? In the time that Southall and Elliott, people were coming in to me to tell me bad things about those people on day one, especially for Southall. I still haven't heard anything like that from about Sandgaard as well. He's clearly got a track record, and like Nathan said, he's come out as a human as well. It's an absolute mess at Charlton Athletic. Unfortunately, that's the way it has been for a while now. Let's hope that there's light at the end of the tunnel. Let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. When we come back, we're going to start talking about that wonderful game, football.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across, Bowers there, Pierce is there, Bowers header, and it's Charlie!
Yes!
Oh, it's
yes!
Oh, he's got! Oh, Patrick Barr! You absolute German beauty! Woo! Dreamland! Charlotte have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, Tom!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be a hero!
Here at Wembley!
Oh my word! Oh my word!
Charlton Live.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live. This is the big match preview, our first big match preview of the season. Normally on day one, Tom, of course, we talk about our plethora of signings in and out. We've got a couple to talk about. I mean, obviously, it's well versed the amount of players we've lost this summer. I think we're all going to miss the likes of Big Naby Sarr, Tom Lockyer, obviously Lyle Taylor has gone as well. We've lost, I think Boya said, we've had 12 out and 3 in, which is not great numbers, if we're being honest. Obviously, we know we're under this transfer embargo. We're unable to add players to our squad unless someone leaves now. We're at the upper limit of the amount of players we're allowed to have now that Dylan Levitt has come in from Man United on loan. But I mean, let's have a quick look at some of those players. So, Tom, 3 have come in. You've got Levitt, you've got Washington, and you've got Gilby. There we go. So, all right, you can have your pick. Which one of those would you like to talk about? Which one of those, well, because you're going first, which one of those excites you the most?
I think it's probably best that I talk about Gilby because I've seen him play a little bit for us, obviously, at Swindon at the weekend. He wasn't someone I knew too much about from MK Dons. I know he'd won a couple of Player of the Season awards there and he came with a good reputation. But actually seeing him play the other day, and as I say, he only got 10, 15 minutes towards the end of the game, but he looked really exciting because he beat at least 2 players every time he got the ball. He was always turning and looking to drive forwards, and that's something that we've missed a little bit in midfield. Johnny does it to a certain extent, but usually gets clattered by the first player he gets past. And we're going to need someone like that because we can talk about the likes of Darren Pratley and George Lapsley who are going to put themselves about defensively, but somebody else who can really drive forward and assist those players up top, because I think we were saying it in the car actually on the way on Saturday that going forward, I reckon we look dangerous. Like people like Ozzy, Johnny, Maka, Connor, who's come in. Those players are high League One, lower Championship standard players for me. It's just defensively where I really worry. And I know Boya said that again today, purely down to numbers. So, yeah, I'm excited to see him play and to see how that midfield sets up. Because, again, going back to Swindon, it was a slightly different formation to what we're used to seeing Boya play last season. And I think he's obviously got to work with what he's got. And over the next month, we'll have a clear idea of what that squad is actually going to look like for the season. But yeah, I was very impressed with him the other day, even just over that brief cameo.
Yeah, he did look good when he came on off the bench at Swindon. So, Lewis, I'll let you speak about the striker, I guess, Connor Washington. Still haven't seen him play, actually, because, of course, he's come down from Hearts, which has been on international duty. Saw both Chooks and Maka score 2 excellent goals against Swindon. But, you know, we need some firepower up there. Obviously, we've lost Lyle Taylor. So the front line is going to be quite interesting this season. You know, there's players who you think should be able to do a job in League One.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with going to Connor especially, I remember him playing for Peterborough at League One level, which sort of triggered the move up to QPR in the Championship. And I remember being impressed with him there. I thought that he's a decent goal scorer. He got sort of a decent tally, a decent return. I think he got 27 goals in 82 appearances for Peterborough, which isn't a bad return. Went to QPR and had a few seasons where he didn't quite sort of hit the heights maybe that were expected, but still scored sort of seven goals a season, something like that. And then we saw him, he got a loan move, didn't he, to Sheffield United. They ended up getting promoted to the Prem. I don't really know how much he featured, but I think he made about 15 appearances or something. So he's obviously got the ability, and I know we tried to sign him last season, so it would have been interesting to see how he'd have done in the Championship then. But I think he's a great acquisition, and I do think that at League One level especially, he'll, you know, not just improve the team, but bring a good bit of competition to Maka, because we saw at the end of last season the sort of the responsibility to score the goals was kind of all on Bond's shoulders. We didn't really expect a huge amount out of Chucks because he'd been out for so long. Then we were looking at Josh Davison for goals, and obviously he's still so young. So it'd be good to have Connor come in and push those guys, you know, push Maka, because I think he's going to be very important this season. At League One level, I can't wait to see how he performs. I thought he was fantastic against Swindon and Chucks as well. Two strikers that I think have probably got a bit of a point to prove this season at League One level, and they'll be pushed by Connor, who I also think will want to come and make an impact again in the English game after spending a bit of time up in Scotland.
And then finally, Nathan, for you, it's Dylan Levitt, the 18-year-old who's come from Man United. You know, I'm quite excited by this one because our young loans from Premier League clubs on the whole have been pretty decent recently. And this guy's obviously made his Welsh debut recently, comes highly rated. I guess you're hoping for big...
Yeah, I mean, with obviously, like you say, he made his debut the other day for Wales, and he hasn't even made a competitive appearance yet. And obviously, that's saying something. And he's well thought of. I think Bo's mentioned Nicky Butt. And obviously, Ryan Giggs has said, I think it's the range of passing. I haven't obviously seen him play because he's not made a competitive appearance yet. But I can, the way that he's being talked about, I can imagine him being like... who can I say? Maybe like when Jonjo first came in, his range of passing was, you know, he was on a different level, really, with his range of passing. And will he be starting a lot? Maybe, I don't know. But we said the same about Connor when he came off the bench against Blackburn. But I think he gives us another, that other bit of dimension. I think Tom said it about Gilby. I think Gilby seems to me a little bit more of a physical presence than Cullen was. And he has a good range of passing. So I think there's a good little signing. Because I think there were times last year where even when, especially towards, well, after coronavirus, something, I remember games at, I think like Swansea and stuff, we just couldn't keep the ball. So the only thing that we could do is go long, just, you know, clip it down the channel and see, and, you know, and see what happens. And there wasn't no connectivity between the midfield and the attackers. But sometimes you might need someone with a bit of nous, with a bit of vision to, instead of just clipping it aimlessly and hoping Maka gets a flick on it, someone who can keep the ball, who wants the ball, can get, find that space and want the ball. And but yeah, no, I'm with you. I think I'm really excited to see him play.
Excellent stuff. Right, so we've only really had a couple of little flashes from Alex Gilby in terms of our new signings playing so far, but this is a slightly unusual first big match preview of the season, in so much as that we've already actually played twice in competitive fixtures so far this campaign, away at AFC Wimbledon, who are playing at QPR at the moment, just to add to the confusion, in the EFL Trophy, and then of course we went to Swindon in the League Cup. Let's have a listen back to how both of those two opening games went for the Addicts.
It's Ostermatt with the shot on the left-hand side. It's a cracking goal. And the opening goal for Ostermatt on 21 minutes here. And what a fine way to open the score.
And there we go. Davison now gets us underway.
Completely.
As the ball out to Ars, a complete gift. Aaron Henry's gifted the ball there. And it's Charlton going to concede. Roscoe straight away. And it's a goal.
But that didn't take long.
That didn't take long at all. Disappointing stuff there. A bit of a gift from Aaron Henry, a wayward pass. Corner to be taken now by Lattigan. He gets the ball in. It's awesome. The header to Terrell Thomas, and it's a great header. And the Dons are 2-1 up. Great ball in.
Always a danger from that. Thomas big in the air, big and strong in the air. Charlton didn't go with him.
I think there was a lot of positives from it. First 45, I thought we was in full control. I couldn't see him scoring from open play. And then obviously giving the goal away straight from kickoff didn't help. And then I think they just overpowered us a bit in the second half. We had a lot of youngsters out there.
Parrington looks to the middle of McCauley Bond. You expect the flag to go up, but it hasn't. It's bounced through to Bond.
Oh, what a finish.
Oh, what a finish on his left foot into the top corner. And Charlton are 1-0 up. It was a lovely ball in from Parrington over the top of the Swindon back four. As I say, I thought Bond might have been offside, but he was allowed to go through, let the ball drop over his shoulder, and with his left foot smashed it into the top right corner. And the Addicts take the lead on 35 minutes. Now Odemayo over on the Swindon right, and he tries to loft it forward, looking for Johnny Smith, who's been useful since coming on. It's a beautiful first touch from Johnny Smith. He's burst into the penalty area, he's still got it on the edge of the penalty area, and slots it in, and that's a wonderful goal from Johnny Smith, the substitute.
The Swindon officials, Swindon manager, Welland, is going mental on this side. As the ball's chipped back across, good header from Anika.
Surely.
With a header!
Yeah, brilliant goal.
It's Barker with the header, beg his pardon. It's his first goal, the young man, for the Addicts. First senior goal, and it's put Charlton back in the lead. Steps in and gives the ball to Nico.
So well.
Superbly well to win the ball and into the goal.
Oh,
what a finish that is. Jackson Ake did superbly well to get past his man on the right-hand corner of the penalty area, got into some space. You thought that's an almost impossible angle. He has to square it, not a bit of it. He slammed it in, I don't know whether it was in between the legs of Kovar. He'll probably be really disappointed that he managed to get that past him. But in the 89th minute, Jackson Ake has put this game beyond doubt.
I think it was a good performance from start to finish. I think some good youngsters out there as well making good performances. I think we controlled the game for large parts of it. Maybe first 10-15 minutes looked a bit nervy, but from then onwards, I think we was in control.
There we go, our first two games of the campaign, defeat in the end at Wimbledon. At the time, no one really cared, because at that time we thought we'd had a failed injunction hearing. We thought Thomas Angarve was going to be taken over in the next couple of days after that. Obviously, there's been a few more twists and turns since then. But then we went to Swindon with a slightly stronger side, and we saw a couple of cracking goals from Macca and from Chooks and Ike. Sandwiched in between those was the goal for the 17-year-old Charlie Barker as well. Really pleased with how he's come into the side. You know, only expected to be breaking into the under-23s this season, let alone the first team. But he's performed admirably in his first two games. And I'd dare say he's got a very, very good chance of featuring up at Crewe on Saturday. Now, the women's team have also had their first game of the season, so let's check in quickly with them. It was against Crystal Palace, their first championship game of the season over at the Oakwood. Ended up in a 2-2 draw. Brand new striker Jess King gave the girls the lead inside the opening 5 minutes. Palace were level almost immediately, then went 2-1 ahead before half time. But it was a debut goal from Shauna Vassell in the last couple of minutes that meant it was a point apiece for the side. And I spoke to Jess King after the game, who signed this summer for the girls, and she said she was very pleased with the overall display on the season opener.
Yeah, I think we did well. Obviously, we went up and then they were winning in the second half, but I felt like that the group felt determined to get a goal back, and you know, we fought till the end and got the goal. So, you know, obviously you don't want to draw, especially at home, but, you know, I think the attitude to come back was spot on.
You would have felt a bit hard done by if you hadn't got anything out of the game today, because it felt like a rather even affair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had a few chances. I had hit the post and that, and we had a couple of other chances, especially in the first half. And, yeah, I mean, I don't like drawing, but, you know, I think, like I said, the attitude is just was good, and even though they had a few spells on top, I think so did we. So, you know, it was a good battle today.
I guess any striker would love to get their debut off with a goal as well, so you must have been really pleased that the chance presented itself in the opening stages.
Yeah, you know, I'm buzzing, you know, especially new team and everything, new season, just to get off the mark really with a goal, and you know, an important one today to get the draw. So I'm happy, obviously. You know, looking, if I was critical, I'd like to have scored the other two chances too, but definitely happy getting one goal.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live. It's time now to start looking ahead to our season opener in League One with Crewe Alexandra. Now, of course, the Alex were down in League Two last season. Because of that, their season was cut short. They haven't played a game in a long, long, long time. 6 months without football for Crewe Alexandra, during which, of course, a slightly unusual situation where they were promoted without the fans present. They were promoted on a points per game basis. So I wanted to find out what that was like for Crewe and what sort of season the home side on Saturday are expecting to have. So I spoke to Stuart Price from the Railway Men podcast, and this is what he had to say. And first of all, I asked him what it was like celebrating promotion when you couldn't actually go to the game.
It was odd. I think the more lockdown went on and the more it became aware that football wasn't coming back, I think most people were, okay, well, if we're not going back, at least we'll be promoted. There's no way we're not going to be promoted because we're top of the league. Even if they go on PPG, which they did, then we're going to drop down to second, but we'll still go up. But then when the actual day arrived, you've got your day of feeling great. That's it. We've been promoted. But then I think we were kind of, as a fan base, we were quite flat, as in we didn't get that opportunity to celebrate at a game. Obviously, you know, football's all about creating memories. It's all about experiences. We didn't get that, and then we didn't get the opportunity to celebrate as a club afterwards. The club were really good. They put on an end-of-season awards that they've streamed live from Reese Heath, our training ground, and they made that really easy for fans to access. But it's not the same when you're watching players socially distance whilst they are not able to be there, basically.
And of course, you've had such a long break now. You know, those of us who were in the Championship last season were at least we had that those 9 games to endure or enjoy, whichever way you want to look at it. But it must be so bizarre to have gone so long without seeing your side. So I guess whatever happens over the next few weeks, you must be glad at least that the crew are back and playing football.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. So, you know, obviously there's the feeling that, well, we'd rather be there, we'd rather be watching it. For me, myself, it's okay. I've just moved out to Dubai, so I'll be watching it all on iFollow, regardless of whether it will be fans in the stadium or not. But for most people, yeah, it's not quite the same with the fact that we can't be there, we can't watch them, we can't cheer them on. And especially this year with us going up, there's lots of people in the crew fan base who haven't been to Charlton, for example. We don't play you guys very often. There's lots of people that haven't been to Hull's ground. We don't play Hull very often. They're the teams that we seem to miss. If we go up, they go down and vice versa, or we're a lot lower down the league structure. So it is annoying, but we have got football back in some capacity.
So what are the hopes for this season then? How's the summer gone in terms of signings?
So if you talk to the people that come on my pod, we've gone from champions, back-to-back promotion with champions, to finishing 5th and staying up and somewhere in the middle. I think Saturday was a reality check. We played Lincoln in the cup. We got beat 2-1. And there's some good clubs in League One. It won't be easy for us this season. What would be a good season, I think, is mid-table security. We've signed well. We've signed some good players this summer. We've got Luke Murphy, who came through our academy. We sold him to Leeds for £1 million 7 years ago. He's played at Leeds, played at Burton and Bolton, and he's just come back on a free. So happy to have him back. We have lost a couple of players, though. We lost James Jones in midfield to Lincoln in the summer. We've also signed a couple of strikers. Mika Mandron, who came through at Sunderland, big, powerful striker. He doesn't look like he scores a lot of goals, but people were very impressed with him on Saturday in the cup game. He's holding up play. We've signed a youngster, Zanzala, from Accrington Stanley, who's looked very impressive in pre-season, but had a knock that ruled him out yesterday, or Saturday, I should say. And then we signed a couple of defenders. Donovan Daniels, who has got mixed reactions from the clubs he's played at before. Again, missed the game on Saturday, and Omar Beckles, who we signed on Friday afternoon, so wasn't registered. So most of these new players we haven't actually seen, but I know a lot of the crew fan base are very excited by who we signed. Omar Beckles, especially. He's the sort of player that we would never have attracted to crew a couple of years ago. But I think what's happened is players are starting to believe in the project that Dave Artell's got going. He was a player. He won promotion with us as a centre-back. He's come back as manager. And he's improved the team year on year in his time there. And what's really impressive is the young players who we were losing on free transfers that had spent all the time in the academy, they're now choosing to spend a little bit longer at crew and extending their contract to make sure that they are making some money for crew as and when the time is right for them to move on. And with this team being a team that got promoted last year, there are quite a few at the minute who've definitely got futures higher up the league. For sure.
Excellent stuff. So final one then, looking ahead to Saturday, what are your expectations? How do you see it going? And what are your fears of Charlton as well, I guess?
Well, we had a little chat before this, and you listing off the players that you are missing due to international duty, I think really sort of hit home how difficult this game is going to be, how difficult the league is going to be. You know, list Johnny Williams, a Wales international, who was, you know, he's one of their... the people that pulls the strings for Wales when he's on his form. And for him to be playing against crew in a league game, I think that's a little bit of an eye-opener. It's the fact we are a higher level. It is a little bit more difficult now. I would be happy with a draw, if I'm honest. I think Charlton are a good team. I think if the off-field situation had not been going on last year, I don't think they would have been relegated. I think they've still got, even though you know you've lost Lyle Taylor, you've lost a couple of good players, you've still got a very good squad for League One level. And I do think if we lose, it won't be the end of the world, because I think at the end of the season, you know, 46 games in the future, you will be there or thereabouts at the top of the league. So
if you're asking me to make a prediction, I'll be cautious and I'll go with a 1-1 draw.
There we go, Stuart from the Railway Men podcast. It's going to be an interesting one, isn't it, Tom? You know, a very much an unknown quantity for us. We haven't played Crewe for a long, long time. I think it's about the year 2000 that we were last in the same division as them. But, you know, they're a side that would have come up from the league below, I'm going to say full of confidence after a promotion, but I don't know if he can be after 6 months. But they'll be looking forward to the challenge. And, you know, we heard what Stuart said there. It's still, even though we've had our problems, we do have players that will put fear into other teams like Johnny Williams. It's going to be a real interesting battle on Saturday.
Yeah, I just can't wait for it to get started now. And obviously, again, going back to last weekend, we had that same scenario with that. I know it was only a League Cup game, but it was the same, you know, two teams that are now going to be in the same division that were two apart. And yeah, it's difficult to really know what to expect. You know, we came down a few seasons ago, played Bury on that opening day with Roger Johnson all those years ago. You know, the time when we got promoted, even last season when we went up to Blackburn in the Championship, and you think, well, they're an established Championship side. I think they'd only gone up the year before, hadn't they? But they're a big team, and we go there and we win 2-1 when there's similar uncertainty about what players we're getting in and stuff. So it's one of those things that usually with Charlton, particularly over the last 4 years, there's been so much chat about what's happening off the pitch during the summer that by the time the football comes around again, you're just pleased to get started. But the difference this year is obviously the break hasn't been as long. The off the pitch stuff has probably been its worst it's ever been. And obviously the COVID situation means we're not actually going to be able to be in the ground. So it's a very weird time to be coming into a new season. But at the same time, come Saturday at 3 o'clock, I'll just be buzzing to see it back again and just can't wait to see the boys play, really.
Yeah, and it's interesting to find out which boys will be playing for us. Ali Boyer was asked for his thoughts ahead of the game. A little bit of team news as well. Starts off by being asked if Johnny Williams, Connor Washington and Dylan Levitt have all returned from international duty in one piece.
Yeah. So Johnny and Connor came back. They're fine. And so did Dylan Levitt. So they all trained today. Chucks is okay. Obviously, he played, 20 minutes on Saturday. So he's okay again. So, we're all good apart from Piercy. Piercy's the only one, obviously, done his knee pre-season, just twisted it. But you know, I spoke to him Tuesday. And even he was saying that he's ahead of schedule. We're okay with injuries.
And with, when you think about it, we've just come down. Crewe just got promoted. It's almost like the ideal scenario, the headline writer's scenario for the first game of the season. So they're going to be coming probably to try and make a statement against a former Championship club.
Yeah, I said to the players today when we was analysing them, I said, look, this game is two teams that have just come into the division. Us obviously coming down, them coming up. So it's going to be tough. They're a nice side. They're a nice side to watch. They move the ball well. They play some good football. This is not going to be easy, especially them being at home first game as well. And the only good thing is there's no crowds. So that's probably a bonus for us. That's the only bonus. But, it's like I've said before, nothing changes. I said the same last season. Sometimes it can take you a few games to get warmed up and get going. I do believe if things go the right way for us, that we will get stronger and stronger as it goes on, because our squad will get stronger and then they develop and then they get used to each other and we just grow and grow. I honestly believe that. But that doesn't take away that anything that we do from there till then, that we ain't going to be trying to get the 3 points. I think we showed that on Saturday. I think we finished the stronger on Saturday, just gone. And we're pushing it. Like, obviously, you've been watching us since I've been in charge, and I'll always push them, you know, and nothing changes.
There we go, Lee Boyer. Good to hear that all the chaps have come back from the international break fighting fit. Lewis, we've seen that win over at Swindon now. That's progression into the next round of the League Cup, which is that draw away at West Ham. So that's a very just reward for what was a decent performance over at the County Ground. Obviously, this is a different kettle of fish because it is the league. Bo said that Crewe are a team that play nice, and we know what situation we are with our current squad. And if this current squad is the one we're stuck with throughout the entire season, then I think mid-table will very much be what we can hope for. But, 11 against 11 on Saturday, a team with a bit of quality in it in the Charlton side, we have to go into it with a little bit of confidence because we have just come off a good performance and a win.
Yeah, definitely. And I was very impressed with how we played on Saturday as well. And we were missing some of those international guys then. I've been impressed over the two games with people like Aaron Ostermer, who's going to get a bit more of a chance in the side at the moment, given the lack of numbers. Didn't feature as much as he'd have wanted to last season, but has impressed me so far. It'd be good to get Johnny back as well, because he missed quite a large fraction of last season with an injury. But the times he was in the side, he was absolutely sensational. He was creating chances. The only thing he was lacking really was a goal. I think on paper, when you look at an 11, I think as Nave said earlier on in the show, when you look at the 11, it's fairly strong. Like, there's some real quality in there, and players that will want to come back and prove a point because of injuries as well that are going to be fired up. But the big concern is that what happens when we may need a plan B off the bench or to change it up. Like, we're all right for a few games or whatever. But once you start getting injuries and everything, and you need to rotate, especially with such a congested season this year because of the quick turnaround and the late start, we've got to be careful because our injury record, we know season after season, isn't the greatest. So when you look at that approaching a new season, that's going to be sort of hanging over us a little bit, the worry of maybe burning some of these players out because we do lack options to change it up. But I do think we've like you say, 11v11, I think we've got every chance to have a successful season, but the sooner we get a bit of support and the mess sorted out upstairs, I think the better, and we can properly strengthen and really, look to compete this season and try and bounce straight back.
Yeah, and Nathan, we spoke earlier about a player that could well be involved on Saturday in Charlie Barker, but I think it'd be interesting to have a little conversation about one who won't be involved. Now, Dylan Phillips, Lee Bowyer said, is not going to be his first choice keeper this season because he's not signing a new contract. He's in his last year. I imagine the second a decent bid comes in, the likelihood is he's going to be off. But I mean, are you surprised that Lee's made a decision not to start with Dylan? Obviously, he's been so dependable for us over the last couple of years. But in Ben Amos, as we saw on Saturday with some very good saves, we've got a pretty good replacement for Dylan there.
Yeah, I'm not surprised what Bo said. I agree with him to an extent. I think Dills has got plenty of plaudits last year, and rightly so. I think without Dills last year, we would have been relegated a lot sooner, in my opinion. But as much as it hurts to say it, we saw something, like it was a different scenario with Lyle. But one player doesn't make a team or a club, players come and go, and Dills hasn't done anything wrong. And who knows, he might end up signing a new contract. Who knows? But at the moment, with him not committing to the club, he wants people that want to play for the club. I'm not saying that Dills doesn't want to play for the club, because I know that's not true. But at the moment, he knows that Ben is going to be here next year, come what may, by the end of the transfer window, whenever that is now, because I forgot when it is. He knows that Amos is going to be here. So it's only fair. If Dills signs a contract, then it's up for grabs again. If Dills goes, we've got Amos. So, and you've got to think of it, apart from Dills, you've got to think of it from Ben's point of view as well. Imagine if Bo's played Dills and then he ends up leaving, and all of a sudden now Ben's good enough, is he? I think he's probably been fair, and he's probably said to Dills and been honest with him. But I think we've just got to be realistic. And I think at the end of the season, when we did get relegated, I think 90% of people didn't expect Dills to be here already. I'm surprised he's still here, but we can always hope. But who knows? Dills might be waiting to see how this court case goes. I don't know, I think Bowes has done the right thing, is instilling it, because you need that, because you're going to have to build. If you think about it, if you go, let's say you do all the prep, you do all your set pieces, you do your defensive positioning, you do your transitions of plays without the ball, with Dills in there, And then on Friday, he moves to Bournemouth. That's all out the window. It's gone. So then Ben's going to come in. So he's going to, he had to make a call. And I'd have to back Bose on this one, but not to say that I want deals to go. I'm hoping that something could get sorted.
Excellent stuff. Right, let's draw a line. I think under this first big match preview of the season, there's so much we still haven't talked about. I'm sure we'll bring up some more stuff on Sunday. Any emails have come in as well, we'll have to save for Sunday because we have had an absolutely packed show, our first show back. But just quickly, I want you guys to give me your prediction for Saturday and then your prediction for where we're going to finish this season. So literally like a two or three word answer. But Tom, what are we going to do Saturday? Where are we going to finish this season?
I think we're going to win on Saturday 2-0, and I think we'll finish 7th.
Oh, that'd be gutting. Right, Lewis?
I think we'll win 2-0 Saturday, and I think we'll finish 4th.
Oh, that'd be better than nothing. And Nathan?
3-2 Saturday to us. With Thomas first, without Thomas 13th.
There we go. Well, that's a good spread there. Well, at least everyone's predicting that we'll be off to a good start on Saturday. Right, that's the end of this week's Charlton Live Big Match Preview. Obviously, still in the circumstances we are with the virus and the various stages of lockdown. We're still not going live yet this season. We're only going out as a podcast recorded remotely, as you can hear there. So thank you for sticking with us, though. Hope you have enjoyed our first podcast back. Don't forget, we'll be back then on Sunday, sort of in the evening time when we'll record and we'll get it out on Sunday evening to look back at whatever happens against Swindon. You can get in contact with that show. Definitely you can tweet us at Charlton Live, or you can email studio@charltonlive.co.uk on Sunday. Have your say on whatever happens at Crewe on Saturday, and of course if you want to talk about any ownership situation that happens between now and then, if it does or if it doesn't, then feel free to do so as well. Right, cheers to the guys for joining me.
Cheers, boys.
Yeah, good to speak to you beautiful people again. I've been Louis Mendes. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back here on Sunday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.